I speak to you in the name of the living God, blessed Trinity, and lover of your souls. Down, down, down the rabbit hole she fell. Would the fall never come to an end? I wonder how many miles I've fallen by this time, Alice said aloud. I must be getting somewhere near the center of the earth. Alice in Wonderland is a marvelous mess of literary nonsense, as is every becoming of age story. Alice must learn what growing into herself looks like, to overcome her fears and find her place in the ecosystem of her world. It's a journey that begins with a fall. And as she falls, she realizes the absurdity of her questioning, of her wondering about how many miles she's already fallen and her exact location in relation to the world she just left behind. The hows and whys are meaningless in her present situation. She is falling. And that means she has absolutely no control over what will happen next. She cannot know where she's going or what it will be like once she arrives. As I read New York Times headlines this week, drought pushes millions into acute hunger in southern Africa, Dubai's extraordinary flooding, China's cities are sinking below sea level, new surge in power use is threatening U.S. climate goals. I fell down, down, down the rabbit hole of environmental crisis, wondering where are we headed and what will our world look like when we arrive. Today we celebrate Earth Day, and our prayers remind us that God gave us the earth and we must recommit to caring for it as God intended. And to help us, we're given Psalm 23. Which just might be Scripture's most beloved psalm, recited from living room rocking chairs at twilight and at the shadow of hospital bedsides. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. Since when? Since when, dear David, to whom this psalm is attributed, since when can human beings commit to not wanting something? These human bodies were made for wanting. In the middle of writing this sermon, I wanted a snack, and I got up and I ate one. We can't survive more than a few days without water, and I promise you we will start wanting it long before that. Our excessive wanting is exactly why there's an Earth Day in the first place. We have to remind ourselves that the Earth matters and that it has its own wants that can conflict with ours. Climate change is about greed, read the headline of a recent CNN report. American consumption has become our measure of success. We teach our children to want material prosperity, even unto the erosion of our planet. Now, I'll admit that my annual Earth Day resolution of sorts sounds a lot like these first words of Psalm 23. One day I shall not want. One day I'll use those cloth napkins my wife puts on the center of the kitchen table. One day I'll say something about the city tossing my recycling into the garbage truck. One day, I'll care enough to consider buying an electric car, but today I know deep down that I want the familiarity of a gas station. I want the ease of the paper product. I want the delusion that my recycling habit is how I save the planet. Down, down, down the rabbit hole Alice fell, until she realized the absurdity of all her wanting, of all her minute concerns in the face of something that was so much bigger than herself. She falls into the land on the other side of the looking glass, an upside-down place that will eventually help her stand right side up in the real world. But she must enter a world that does things differently first, in order to realize that a different way of doing things just might be possible in her world too. In the upside down world, she encounters her deepest questions and fears as she engages nature and the animal kingdom. Her first conversation of note is with an oversized hookah-smoking caterpillar. "Who are you?" the caterpillar asks Alice. "Well, I hardly know, sir, just at present," she replies. "At least I know who I was when I woke up this morning, but I think I must have changed several times since then." "What do you mean by that?" the caterpillar asks sternly. "Explain yourself." "I can't explain myself, I'm afraid, sir," said Alice, "because I'm not myself, you see."
"I don't see," said the caterpillar.
"Well, I'm afraid I can't put it more clearly," Alice replied very politely, "for I can't understand it myself to begin with, and being so many sizes in a day, well, it's very confusing."
"It isn't," said the caterpillar.
"Well, perhaps you haven't found it so yet," said Alice, "but when you have to turn into a chrysalis, you will someday, you know, and then after that into a butterfly? Well, I should think you'll feel a little queer, won't you?"
"Not a bit," said the caterpillar.
"Well, perhaps your feelings may be different," said Alice. "All I know is it would feel very queer to me." This is her foreshadowing. This is the moment Alice sees into a mirror dimly her own path toward transformation. She becomes aware that the process ahead of her of becoming someone new will feel queer. How do we become someone who does not want, as Psalm 23 invites us to consider? Well, to find out, let's first let our familiar and beloved psalm become a little queer itself. "Would you believe me if I said that there are no sheep in Psalm 23? Not one. And what if I told you that this psalm isn't even about a shepherd? It's about a king. The shepherd is an ancient Near Eastern metaphor for kingship. It dates back to the Sumer civilization, later known as Babylon, the earliest known civilization in Mesopotamia. From Sumer, we get the story of Gilgamesh, which you might have heard of. That's the oldest written story known to exist, in which King Gilgamesh is described as the shepherd of the people. Now, Abraham was likely living in Sumerian Babylon at the time Gilgamesh was written down, which means that Sumer culture shaped the Hebrew people as they were being birthed. In fact, in Hebrew, the word for a shepherd's staff is the same word for a king's scepter. As the Hebrew scriptures evolve, shepherding evolves as a metaphor for kingship within it. Psalm 23 is about God's kingship of land and people. And the best kings, the Bible tells us, ruled like shepherds who know how to care for both the land and the sheep. The shepherd in our poem leads us to green pastures, a strategy farmers might call today rotational grazing. By moving from pasture to pasture, the soil has time to recover from the sheep's presence. Overgrazing can lead to erosion and the spread of invasive plants and weeds. Wendell Berry, American poet, farmer, and environmental activist, writes, "The soil is the great connector of lives, the source and destination of all. It is the healer and restorer and resurrector by which disease passes to health, age into youth, death into life. Without proper care for it, we can have no community, because without proper care for it, we can have no life." If the shepherd doesn't lead the sheep to green pastures, the sheep and the land suffer, as does the economic life of the shepherd and the health of the community. Shepherds know that land and livestock and life are all connected, as does the ruler of a nation. And God's law made it clear that the earth belongs to God, but Israel's kings are stewards of it. God desired that every 7 years the land would have its own Sabbath and lay fallow, and one in every 50 years that there would be a jubilee, which meant that all laborers were freed from their debts and all land was restored to each of the founding 12 tribes of Israel. Embedded in God's design for care of land and people is a system of returning and rest. Returning and rest. This is the narrative of Psalm 23. O God of peace, who has taught us that in returning and rest we shall be saved. That's a prayer for quiet confidence in our Book of Common Prayer. Psalm 23 is an invitation to quiet confidence in the rod and the staff of the Shepherd King, quiet confidence in this path of transformation that the poem moves us through. We love this psalm because it reminds us that we are a part of the fullness of creation that is well cared for by God. It's like a storybook page we long to fall into, just as Alice fell into that rabbit hole, where we can imagine a world where our darkest fears are but a valley to pass through to reach an eternal celebration. A place where we can finally imagine a world without want. Wendell Berry ends his famous poem, The Wild Geese, with these words, "What we need is here. What we need is here." And I think that is exactly how Psalm 23 is meant to begin. In Hebrew, "I shall not want" can also be translated something like, "I lack nothing now, at present." "I shall not want" isn't a hopeful prayer or a divine moral imperative. It is a present reality. What we need is here. The psalmist dares to believe that. The psalmist dares to believe that God is already and always has been the ruler of creation, who, like the shepherd, knows what to do to care for it best. My friends, a greedy wanting is what has led us to today's environmental crisis. And if that reality feels a little queer to think about, don't worry, Alice warned us that we caterpillars might feel this way once our transformation began. See, when we're crawling around in the dirt, hungry and pudgy and green, it seems impossible to imagine that one day we will sprout wings and burst into the sky in a flurry of color. But we can, and we will, if we, like Alice, go through our own metamorphosis. The other day, my wife said to me, "We have the land we need. We have the seeds we need. Let's make a garden in our backyard." And though I smiled, my brow furrowed, and the landscaper's daughter within me anxiously worried what would happen to my grass and the pleasure that I have when mindlessly cutting it. And how would the garden affect my mowing strategy? I realized that to open myself up to this new way of being with the earth in my own backyard, I would have to let go of some of the ways that I currently engage with it. But we have all we need. That's how my wife led into this conversation. And after a walk on our property and the mapping out of the garden, she began to invite me into the metamorphosis that she had already begun. I'm pretty sure her change began that day she swapped out the paper napkins for the cloth ones. It felt like such a big decision for our household. We sat on the couch and imagined how our lives would change. But once we made that change, the transition seemed rather small. Afterwards, my wife realized that she just needs to keep choosing one manageable change that's good for the planet and doing it. In foresight, each change appeared so big. But in hindsight, it became so simple. And once the realization of that change's simplicity struck her, she would go on to the next manageable change. I imagine that many of you have read the children's book, The Very Hungry Caterpillar. This is my son's Stuffy. This guy's story is true to real life. A caterpillar eats and eats and eats its entire life, greedily satisfying its every wanting, until the day it decides it's ready to change. And on that day, it stops eating. And then it hangs itself upside down. And in that upside down world, it begins to spin and spin until it weaves a cocoon or molts into a chrysalis. That barely perceptible, repetitive movement of simply spinning is what eventually brings about metamorphosis. And I wonder if we are not much different than the caterpillar. If we too can recognize when we've consumed enough and say we have all that we need, and so begin our own small act of spinning that over time will bring about our transformation. If we will live in an upside-down world just long enough, one day we'll find that we've sprouted wings and can fly. And like Alice, we will have found our place in the ecosystem of God's world.